Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. So we are this morning reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 9, Chapter 10, The Pastimes of Lord Ramachandra. And today we will read verse 28. Kritaisha vidava lanka vayam cha kulunandana dehakrito nam gridranam atma naraka hetave. Translation: O pleasure of the Rakshasa dynasty, because of you, the state of Lanka, and also we ourselves, now have no protector. By your deeds, you have made your body fit to be eaten by vultures, and your soul fit to go to hell. This is Mandodari speaking. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. One who follows the path of Ravana is condemned in two ways. His body is fit to be eaten by dogs and vultures, and the soul goes to hell. As stated by the Lord himself in Bhagavad Gita 16:19, Tanaham dushata kruran samsareshu naradaman shipam yajasram ashubhan asurish beva yonishu. Those who are envious and mischievous, who are the lowest amongst men, are cast by me into the ocean of material existence, into various demoniac species of life. Unquote. Thus, the destination of godless atheists such as Ravana, Hiranyakashipu, Kamsa, and Dantavakra is a hellish condition of life. Mandodari, the wife of Ravana, could understand all this because she was a chaste woman. Although lamenting for the death of her husband, she knew what would happen to his body and soul. For although one cannot see directly with one's material eyes, one can see with eyes of knowledge. Pashyanti jnana chakshusha. In Vedic history, there are many instances of how one becomes godless and is condemned by the laws of nature. The verse again. Kritaisha vidava lanka vayam cha kulunandana dehakrito nam gridranam atman narika hetave. O pleasure of the Rakshasa dynasty, because of you the state of Lanka, and also we ourselves, now have no protector. By your deeds, you have made your body fit to be eaten by vultures, and your soul fit to go to hell. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swaminiti Namane Namaste Saraswati Deve Gaurvani Pracharane Nirvishesha Shunyavani Vastitya Dejitarane Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Shivasani Gaurav Bhaktivrinda
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Vanchkav Charubhyas Jagripas Sindhubhya Evacha Panidharam Bhavarebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Yes, so devotees, the story continues, and there are a number of interesting points here. Continuing the idea of the value and the power of chastity for a woman, faithfulness, and these feminine qualities like sobriety, and like this, they empower a woman in ways which might not be expected. You might not expect that if a person is very faithful and chaste and not deviated to other people, you might not expect that such a person becomes very philosophically astute. Maybe certain other qualities you might expect, like a certain type of strength of character, resolve, ability to make decisions and stick to them, that sort of thing. But to have philosophical understanding, sometimes some of these qualities which develop in devotees, not just ladies, but just devotees in general, some of the qualities which develop, you might not expect in the sense of being obvious sort of derivatives of the original quality. Like one very important example is there in the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 2, verse 16. Should I ask if anyone knows what is canto 1, chapter 2, verse 16, or would it be best not to ask? Anyway, Sushushro Shradadanasya Vasudeva Katayuchi Siyan Mahatsevayabhibra Punyatevanishevanat. By serving those devotees who are completely free from all vice, great service is done. By that service, one gains an affinity for hearing the messages of Vasudeva or Krishna. In other words, if you serve the devotees, particularly the advanced devotees, then a natural attraction starts appearing from within the heart for hearing about Krishna. And you might think, well, how could it be? What's the relationship? How does serving devotees produce an attraction to hearing about Krishna? What do you think? This is an interesting little example. It is. And to illustrate the point, we can just mention in the 11th canto, there's another verse, the verse which says that how practicing devotional service produces satisfaction and happiness. And the point is made, just like when a hungry person eats, first of all, their hunger is satisfied, then they get some from the taste, they get some pleasure, and then from the food they get physical strength. These are three results of eating for a person who is hungry, really hungry. And it's easy to understand, isn't it? How it works. It's not like some strange process that some result is apparently coming from nowhere. But in this case, it may be more difficult to understand the connection. Serve the devotees, an attraction to hearing about Krishna develops. It just comes and you find, oh, it's so interesting to sit in Srimad Bhagavatam class that I don't want to fall asleep. And not only that, but and actually stimulated, inspired, because I served the devotees. Do you follow the point, the principle involved? It appears that they're not connected. You know, if you serve the devotees, well, different results can be there. Perhaps the most obvious or possible would be the devotees would be very happy with you, and they would therefore benedict you, or they would reciprocate with you in different ways. They might give you gifts, or just they might then help you also as a reciprocation, and various other things are possible. Once in our GBC meetings, we did a special program called Agyata Sakha, means unknown friends. Everyone was given on a piece of paper a name, the name of a devotee. You know, Krishna Das, for argument's sake. But Krishna Das did not know that you had his name. And the idea is you have to serve him without him knowing it. Yes. Render different types of services without him knowing it. Agyata Sakha, the unknown friend. So I got, would you believe, one morning I found an envelope pushed under by the door of the room I was staying in. And in it was 50 euros. Hurry ball. Another day, a pizza just arrived. Unsolicited. And various other things. And I also had to do things for someone who didn't know. But anyway, in this particular point of we serve the devotees and we get an attraction to hearing about Krishna. The point is, the connection is, and when we understand it, then we see, oh yes, of course, we can understand how it would be. That when we serve the devotees who are very dear to Krishna, Krishna becomes pleased. And then Krishna thinks, I want to do something for you, for the one who's rendering the service. And just like we mentioned, we read last night in Bhagavad Gita 10.10. Should I ask anyone what's Bhagavad Gita 10.10? Anyway, to those who are constantly devoted to serving me with love, I give the understanding by which they can come to me. When Krishna feels he wants to give his best gift to someone who's really pleased him, he gives knowledge, he gives understanding. So similarly, when we serve the devotees, Krishna becomes very pleased. And Krishna feels, I want to give the best thing to this devotee who's serving my devotees. And therefore he gives the attraction to hearing about him, because from that we get understanding. So in a similar way, we might not see the connection. Mandodari, very chaste, even though her husband is just a real first-class rascal, grade A+, maybe A++++, just the worst. What to speak of getting involved with other women, but he's actually just publicly collecting them. And the wife has to live with the other women who have just been kidnapped and, you know. But she put up with it. And she remained faithful. Even though sometimes some of those women would get a bit, you know, because they're kidnapped, they didn't come voluntarily. Some of them would get a bit upset with Ravana. And even like Sita, who got very upset. And what did Ravana say? that either you willingly accept me and just offer yourself to me, or I'll eat you for breakfast, not even for lunch, for breakfast after 1 month. Yes. So she was a very chaste woman, despite there being good reason not to be. She was very faithful. And as Prabhupada says here, she could understand that someone like her husband Ravana would, on one hand, his body would be eaten, and that was all it was worth now. Throw it away. That's the idea. Burial means get it out of the way, get it under the ground. Cremation is more effective. Just burn it. And then you don't have to waste, you know, land with a cemetery. You get so many, I don't know how many hundreds or thousands of acres of good land are wasted with cemeteries. And the life is over. There's nothing more at all. It's all gone. Yeah. Or, you know, you go to Moscow in the Red Square, which is the very center. They have preserved the body of Lenin, who died, I don't know, in 1918 or in 20-something. They were talking about 100 years ago or thereabouts. They have preserved his body. You can go in and see. It looks just like when he died. What a waste. It's just rubbish. Burn it. And that's it. Hare Krishna. So, anyway, but the thing is, so, Mandodari could understand this. And she was not thinking, let us bury my husband's body. Oh. She didn't go, anyway, she was not thinking like that. And I will go and visit from time to time and put flowers. She understood, this body is fit to be eaten by dogs. And in Vedic society, dogs are not taken very seriously. Yeah. Dogs or vultures. In other words, just rubbish. And the soul fit to go to hell. She understood these things. She understood these things. That this person, my husband, even though, you know, he maintained me, but he was sort of a rubbish person. And he's just going to go to the place where the rubbish people go, to the hellish planets, thrown away, just thrown away, onto the rubbish pile of history. So she could understand these things because she was a chaste woman. And, well, this is something that ladies can meditate on. And this is something that men can think about. It's not like it doesn't work for men. If men are very staunch and focused and not getting deviated into other women, or just focused on, if they're focused on their duties and doing everything very nicely as they should, they also get that sort of empowerment to understand. So, Prabhupada, though, he raises another point. Although lamenting, it's related, but it's a little different. Although lamenting for the death of her husband, she knew what would happen to his body and soul. For although one cannot see directly with one's material eyes, one can see with eyes of knowledge. Pashyanti jnana chakshus. Jnana chakshus means the eyes of knowledge. is, like, for example, in the beginning of Ishapanishad, Srila Prabhupada discusses a very important point about how the conditioned soul has four defects. Perhaps you are familiar with that discussion. We have imperfect senses. We have the tendency to make mistakes. We are in illusion. And what's the fourth one? We have the propensity to cheat. So you could say that there's a sort of a hierarchy or a sequence, you know, arguably, to some degree. Imperfect senses. First of all, you perceive things wrongly. Imperfect senses. First of all, you perceive things wrongly. Then, we are in a deluded condition. We think we are these bodies. So we apply our mistaken, incorrect perceptions to an illusory, unreal conception of existence. It's not like that. It's not like that. But we think it is, so we apply our wrong perceptions to an illusory conception of life. Then in doing that, we make mistakes. And then on top of that, we cheat. Even ourselves, sometimes. And certainly we cheat others. Like there was one devotee, it's just a funny little thing, and it could be taken in different ways, actually. But there was, in South Africa many years ago, there was some happening in the news. Like at night, some special drama. And this devotee came to the temple the next morning and said, "Ah, you know what happened? And something happened." He said, "Yes, I saw it on TV. My wife told me." You could take it in different ways. But you could take it, either he saw it on TV or his wife told him. But yeah, it was just funny the way he put it. "I saw it on TV. My wife told me," in the same sentence. So like this, yeah. One has wrong perceptions. One thinks that... well, the example Prabhupada gives there is we look at the sky and we see the sun and it looks like, you know, a little, like a coin or something, a little disc up there. But it's not. It's much, much bigger than this whole planet. Then illusion, the example he gives, of course there are many that can be given, is we think we're these bodies. So we mistakenly perceive that this world has so much enjoyment to offer. We are not seeing it for what it is. We're not seeing it for what it is. And then we apply that, "Oh yes, I can enjoy here. I can enjoy here," meaning I am this body, and I can enjoy as a body. And then we make all sorts of mistakes in trying to carry out our enjoyment. And then on top of that, we cheat, and we cheat ourselves. Mistake. Prabhupada, the example Prabhupada gives in Ishapanishad. Who's read Ishapanishad? You must have. Have you read it? Your Bhakti Shastri, right?
Read that.
What's the example given? Tell me. Of making mistakes. Prabhupada gives a classic example of someone who made a stupid mistake and paid a price for it. Gandhi. It's the example Prabhupada gives. He made a mistake. He knew. They told him. There are people around. They want to kill you. The day before, as I understand, someone tried to do it. But at the Birla Temple, you know the Birla Temple in Delhi? That's where it happened. Famous temple. Someone tried to climb or to shoot over the wall, but the wall was too high. And he tried to climb up and then shoot over the wall by kind of holding onto the wall. But someone came and he ran before he could shoot, but he dropped the gun. And they found the gun. So they knew that this was going on. And they warned him. But Gandhi thought, no, it's okay. So, but then the next day, the same person came right in. And went, walked up to him. Namaskaram. And shot him a couple of times. And that was it. What would you say? Bad Malenge. So he made a mistake. It was a mistake. Who has not made some stupid mistake and thought, why did I do that? Even recently. So like that. And then on top of everything, we cheat and we cheat ourselves. That, oh, you know, so many people, they smoke, they're addicted, and they know they shouldn't. But they think, oh, one last one for the road or something. And cheating themselves. So, therefore, Prabhupada says here, you know, Mandodari understood the real situation. Because even though one cannot see directly with one's material eyes, one can see with eyes of knowledge. And therefore we can know that this is what's going to happen, particularly to the soul, because the soul really is invisible to the material eyes. And we can know that if a person follows some program of activity like Ravana, and even you don't have to be, you know, doing things on the scale that Ravana was doing. But in principle, the same types of mundane activities, you may not see the result. Means, in this case, she says, your soul is fit to go to hell. You may not see the person go to hell, but with Jnana Chakshus, the eyes of knowledge, then you can understand, or you could say, see, this is what's going to happen. And therefore it said, Prabhupada would say, that the devotees don't really so much, not in the way of being dependent on it, the devotees don't really see with their eyes, they see with their ears. Of course, we also see with our eyes, you know, it's a matter of understanding. There's a little subtlety involved. But in terms of these types of matters, the soul going to hell, we see with our ears. We hear. And of course, a lot of times, we hear, and then we do see. I mean, in regards to something else, that people do something they shouldn't and they suffer. First of all, we hear about it, and then we see it happen, and then we realize, oh yes, it's true. It's true. So, you know, like, I remember as a child going to a place where they had a little cafe, a little snack bar. And on the front, for some reason, I don't know why, there was a like a stainless steel bar which was heated. But I didn't know that I was a petit garçon. I don't know, maybe trois ans, something like that. And my mother told me, don't touch it. And I, not that I deliberately said, oh, you know, I want to touch it. But somehow I did touch it, and wow, I got burned. So first of all, there was some knowledge, don't touch it, it's hot. But then somehow it didn't register sufficiently. But then, wow, then I got the experience. So seeing with the eyes of knowledge, or seeing through our ears, is more important than just seeing with the eyes. And Prabhupada there in Ishpanishad, with this example of the sun, according to our eyes, the sun is just a little something you could hold in your hand. But if we hear properly, then we understand the reality more clearly. So like this, as devotees, we have to work on these things. There are other examples Prabhupada gives. There also, in Ishapanishad, as I recall, Prabhupada gives the example that stool, of course, is like permanently contaminated. You cannot clean it and make it nice. You cannot. So it's just permanently in that contaminated state. But the stool of a cow is not contaminating. Not only that, but it actually cleanses things which are contaminated, and you know, it's just a very well known fact. And the urine also, same thing. Not only not impure, but purifies things which are impure. And another example, similar example, tell us the example. Shunk. Okay, yeah, the conch shell. Bone is also permanently contaminated. Yeah. But a conch, which is bone, is pure. So Prabhupada gives these examples in the context of Vedic knowledge, that even though according to our normal experience, it's not like that at all, it's quite the opposite, that the Vedas tell us that it's like this, and it is. Therefore we should see with our ears and not be too dependent on seeing with our eyes. It doesn't mean we just, you know, totally discard the idea of seeing with our eyes, but we should be very careful not to give too much importance to just what we see with our eyes. And Mandodari, she was in this type of position on the basis of her chastity and purity as a devoted lady. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki.
Jai.
ISKCON Flak Yatra ki.
Jai.
Hare Bol. Any comment or question? About anything. This is now a, what would you call it? Well, questions and answers in Creole, what would you say? Prashna, no, that's in there. Hindi. Question, a response. Wait. Or prashna. Or jawab. Yahwah Ova. Yawab Jawab. Haribol. Okay. Any point anyone like to raise?
Regarding the what we have to believe in the Vedas, what has been written. I would like to add regarding this history fast. We do fasting regularly.
Fasting.
Yes. Oh, fasting. Now it is being through maybe. Fasting is a cure for cancer.
Oh, okay. Well, I don't.
Scientists have just been discovering.
Anyway, Prabhupada recommends fasting. I mean, the Vedic scriptures recommend fasting. Prabhupada gives the example of Ekadasi, that if possible, it's good to fast. Completely on Ekadasi. Give the system a bit of a chance to kind of, you know, have a rest. Yeah. So, well, I mean, that I can say. Prabhupada, though, he also says, you know what Prabhupada says? That if someone eats too much, they get diabetes. And if someone eats too little, they get tuberculosis. There'll be tendencies to get those conditions. And it's not always the case, but there will be tendencies. So at the very least, you know, like Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, we shouldn't eat too much or too little. Sleep too much or too little, and nor should we have too much, like, well, Prabhupada uses the word recreation, or too little. You could, you know, substitute the word exercise. Prabhupada himself exercised, even in his very late life. He regularly exercised quite, you know, fairly vigorously. But if you become, you know, an exercise maniac, yeah, then you just get so much into bodily consciousness. How is my body? How do I feel? What about this muscle and that muscle, and, you know, or a whole special program for all your different parts of the body, and it's like an unnecessary obsession. So for the devotees generally, moderation is like the general broad principle, as opposed to extremes of too much or too little. Although Prabhupada did, and actually, you know, in Bhakti Sandhava, Srila Jiva Goswami gives a sort of a recommendation. I don't know if you take it as far as to say that he's really recommending, but he gives at least an example of what can be a pure Ekadasi. There's a pure Ekadasi. You start the night before fasting. So it's the dasami. It's actually on the 10th day. It's not on the 11th. So you start fasting. Then you stay up the whole night hearing and chanting about Krishna. Then the actual Ekadasi, the whole day you fast and you hear and chant about Krishna. Means you don't sleep. And then the Ekadasi night, going into the Dwadasi, the 12th day, you don't sleep or eat anything. And you stay up the whole night, second night in a row, with full program of hearing and chanting, until the next morning, when it is actually the Dwadasi. Then you can eat a little. but you don't sleep until the night of the Dwadasi. It's not like you just crash out. Bah! I stayed up the whole night. I have a right to sleep. He gives that as an example of a pure Ekadasi. And Prabhupada here and there, you know, if you study, you'll see, he does mention how, like, a complete fast on Ekadasi is good and is done by some. He definitely doesn't say that everyone must. Like, everyone must chant 16 rounds, follow the regular principles. But he doesn't say everyone must fast. It's like, it's a good idea, something along those lines. I once fasted completely, totally, from literally everything. Didn't drink even water. Nothing. For 6 or 7 days. And on the last day, I fainted. Yeah. Fortunately, there was a chair there, so I sat down. But otherwise, I would have just gone out onto the floor. And it's extremely dangerous. You know, if you fall and hit your head, you can die easily. So, next question.
A question. I have a question from the first deep. You were mentioning about that if someone is very attached to money, money, he wants to accumulate money, then he's some sort of a Ravana.
Yes.
So, but we, personally, I think because I'm a Grihastha, although I'm a, so to say, I'm a devotee, that I should accumulate some money for my old age, for the children. Is it right? Or how it should be? Okay. In what perspective we should
take? Yes. You know, that is permissible. Even Prabhupada did that. Prabhupada had a will, and in his will, he left a monthly stipend to, at least to his wife, and I forget the exact details, but it was sort of like a moderate amount, a reasonable amount, for, you know, a reasonable standard of living. Nothing, not like poverty level, and not extravagant, but kind of normal for the rest of the life. But then as soon as she died, that stopped. Yeah. So Prabhupada did that. So, in other words, you know, we can take that as an example to make decent arrangements for oneself, for one's immediate family members. That's acceptable and a good idea. But not extravagance. When you start getting into extravagance, it's another thing. Like, something I read some years ago, when Paul McCartney divorced his previous wife, she, in her settlement, she asked for, you know, a huge amount of money, millions, because she said, they should maintain the same standard of living. And among other things, she said that she felt she needed enough money to fly first class, you know, to whatever, do this or that, something. So it went to court. Paul McCartney contested it. And it was really reduced drastically. What they call gold digging. So, but, you know, some decent sort of amounts should be there. But then when there's excess, you know, for a wealthy school teacher, head of department or headmaster or whatever, when some excess builds up, it should be used in Krishna's service, definitely. Anyone else? Who?
Padma Maharaj.
Okay.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Please accept my humble obeisances. Being a chaste wife means serving the husband nicely. But what if pleasing the husband would mean engaging in activities not being too Krishna conscious?
Not being too Krishna conscious. What's too? Anyway. The thing is, we mentioned the other day, there's a verse, I think it's the seventh canto, I should have the reference there. Anyone got a phone or something with Prabhupada's books? Anyway, you may know the verse. How the chaste wife should engage in the service of the husband who is not fallen. That's kind of the relevant thing. It doesn't mean that she should just cook meat for him, you know, etc., etc. Those types of things as part of her faithfulness and, you know, chastity. But if the person, if the husband becomes fallen, she doesn't have to participate in his fallen condition and in that way become fallen herself. That's, you know, in simple terms, the answer. Is that okay? Padma Maharaj. Bien bon. Okay. Hare Krishna. Anyone else? Last chance? Srila Prabhupada ki. Say to us.